Welcome to Evolving KM, a podcast where we discuss how knowledge management is progressing and the impact that's having on KM professionals. I'm Amy Monahan.
And I'm Gwen McAlpin. In each episode, we interview people who have either worked in or on the periphery of knowledge management. We get their perspective on how this profession is evolving to meet the shifting demands of legal service delivery. We hope you enjoy this episode.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining us. Today, we are speaking with Kate Simpson. Kate, can you describe your current role and tell us a bit about yourself and how you got to your current role?
Hello, I am the National Director for Knowledge Management at Bennett Jones. We're a firm with offices across Canada, Calgary, Vancouver, Edmonton, and Toronto. We're seen as a slightly bigger firm, but compared to the US and firms in the UK, we're quite a mid-sized firm. So we have about 400 lawyers focused on energy, mining, massive infrastructure projects, funds and finance. And I lead a team of 5 KM lawyers, 3 content specialists, and 1 legal tech specialist. And I head up the strategy and execution for the KM projects here at Bennett Jones.
Oh, great. Fantastic. That sounds like a pretty diverse team. Can you talk a little bit about how you got to your current role? Because obviously you don't have a Canadian accent.
No, quite.
Can you tell us a bit about your background?
Yes, definitely a circuitous route to get to KM, which I think is pretty much how all of us, we kind of fall into KM rather than it being, you know, a childhood dream. Now I would say it is a dream job. I love it. But so I read law back in England and I thought I would go the solicitor route. But this was back in the heady days of the digital bubble. And so the idea of becoming a lawyer, nothing to do with IT law, or quitting and substituting the law path for a legal startup was just too good an offer to pass up. So the internet was just getting going and I was involved in designing content-rich legal websites before websites were a thing. And we worked on digital collections of precedents and we were integrating new search technologies and taxonomies. So it was a really exciting time to have finished education. So, you know, I often look back thinking, you know, so I wish I'd maybe gone the barrister route because in the UK there's the solicitors and the barristers. And I think I would have enjoyed the freedom and flexibility that being a barrister would be, but I would have missed out on the technology kind of revolution that was happening at the time. So that legal startup was a legal publishing, but only had a digital arm. So we didn't have any of the problems that Thomson Reuters, for example, had when they were starting out, because they had books and books were their primary profit center. So digital looked like it was going to eat that profit center. Whereas for this small company, we were only delivering case summaries of what happened in the courts yesterday by the internet. So we were designing the very first daily updates that lawyers were receiving. It was a fantastic time, so energizing, and we were trying to disrupt the publishing market. So I think that was my first job after law school. So I kind of got into the tech thing quite quickly, but from an information architecture, so very content rich. But my obsession was with something that didn't actually have a name back when I was doing it, but information architecture then became user experience, and now we just refer to it as design thinking. And I was a consultant for 8 years, both in the UK and Canada. And so I've been inside 10 different law firms over my career, and you definitely get to see the differences and the sameness of law firms. But that user experience approach and that the focus on information architecture and how we design websites for lawyers to use and how to make those as intuitive as possible kind of still defines the way I approach all of my KM projects and initiatives that I'm responsible for today. So that circuitous route looked random at the time, but now that you can look back with hindsight, you can see the thread that was running through it and really, you know, even back in when I was working for that startup, looking at it now, I could see KM was always going to be the thing I would do.
That seems to be a little bit of a theme that people who are, you know, come into KM because it's, you know, it's not necessarily what people go to law school to do or you know, think of their career in it because it's kind of niche. So we're finding a lot of people have sort of a circuitous route or can look back and realize that even before I was in a true KM role, I was, you know, I had the KM mindset. I had sort of that way of thinking of things. So I think that's really interesting that we're kind of seeing that trend.
That's right. I really like that definition. It's not really a definition of KM, but people, some people describe KM as like the people, that Venn diagram with the people, the process and the technology. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And KM is kind of the intersection. And I think, you know, that really describes my obsession with KM, really, in that, you know, the focus on our end users is, it comes from the user experience thing, but it being such a people-based work that we get mm-hmm. to figure out what lawyers and clients need, and the idea of collaboration and how people interact with each other and learn from each other, and figuring out what tools and expertise and input or new ways of thinking or service delivery do they need, and how do we find that across the firm. And then after people, it's the process, and I'm a bit process obsessed. I kind of like learning how people do things, because like people figure out their own ways of doing things, and I think knowledge workers need the flexibility or the, you know, the autonomy to figure out how they should do something. So you know, it's I'm more of an agile kind of person when it comes to process improvement, for example. I think Six Sigma has some good lessons for us, but we're not manufacturing, and knowledge workers don't like being told what to do and how to do it. So we have to find more agile ways of recommending more efficient ways of doing things. And that, I think, is, again, you know, if you put the lawyer into the center of your initiatives, you kind of come out that way thinking, you know, should we be making the tech as easy to use as possible, or should we actually design the tech around the lawyer and how they currently practice? And I think, you know, legal tech really hasn't got there yet, but we have some way to go. But the tech, I think, is a, like, I've only learned tech through osmosis. So I've run development teams in my past, and you just pick up the words that
they
use.
Yeah, you pick things up and you sort of apply, you know, kind of your different experiences and sort of bring them together. I like that concept.
Exactly.
Of,
and being that bridge.
Experiences.
That's right. You can translate what a lawyer really wants and what's possible from a tech point of view.
Yes.
And I think that bridge role that KM plays is so vital, but I think that we don't take that role seriously enough to make sure that lawyers and tech can actually talk together, but through good processes and good resources, such as requirements documents that actually make sense and visuals that lawyers can understand and agree with. So I think it does, it you know, the three circles of that Venn diagram, I think, really does define how I approach a lot of the initiatives that we have here.
That's also a common theme. Oh, go ahead, Gwen.
Oh, I was going to say, this makes me think of the article that you wrote in Canadian Lawyer Magazine on bring on the product managers, and this idea that KM is ideally suited to take kind of this user-facing, user advocacy, if you will, product management role. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yes. So I'll talk about my KM lawyers later, but we recently hired a legal tech and innovation specialist. So we call them legal tech and innovation just because it's easier for, well, probably easier for lawyers to understand what that is than if I hired a legal product manager. What we wanted was to help, we need help delivering product success inside the firm. And I am a bit of an early adopter of new tech. So we were early subscribers in Canada to Kira and Closing Folders, BlueJay Legal, Loom Analytics, and HiQ. And these are kind of new types of technology for lawyers. They are substantive-based workflow tools. So it's not like Outlook or Word, which help desk are brilliant at supporting and maintaining and rolling out. These are tools that specific lawyers need to use at specific times during their workflows and their deals and cases, etc. So, you know, these are tools that lawyers use to perform tasks differently. So it's a different, they're a different solution. So they have to lawyers have to change the way that they work to actually use them. And that's much harder to do, to get lawyers to use these tools if you are the vendor. Like, you can sit there outside of our firms and, you know, scream from the sidelines about how you should use it. But what I wanted was someone internally that could help us deliver that from, you know, and I see the product lifecycle as a kind of lifecycle, but also a funnel where, you know, we need someone inside our firm that is kind of responsible for product success. And that's, mm-hmm. you know, it's not rolled out 100%. You figure out which groups need these different tools, but rollout and adoption internally is a complicated business. And so I put my KM hat on and said, right, we need to develop internal expertise about how to buy, implement, and roll out our legal technology solutions. And so what I wanted to do was, like, I wanted to answer questions like, what change management techniques work? What doesn't? How do we inspire and engage at the pilot stage? How do we cross the chasm between early adopters and the early majority? What communication channels or initiatives work or don't work? How do we embed these tools into the practices? What combination of kind of demos and training and follow-ups and specific visits are required? And what substantive support do these tools need that our amazing help desk aren't able to answer? And it, you know, it felt like I was building a precedent system, because actually what I want is to create those templates to figure out, so this is how a successful project works. It's a vanilla project, but here are some tips and tricks about how things that we've tried, things that worked, things that didn't work, that sort of mm-hmm. thing. And I wanted someone to focus exclusively on developing that product success. So they're responsible for ROI. So they baseline all of our metrics so that we can track usage over time and whether things work, you know, whether some campaigns work and others don't. So we have posters up in the kitchen. We have drive-bys, as we call them, and we get invited to the practice group meetings here. So we're quite lucky that we actually have a platform for telling them the next thing that's coming, etc. But it's trying to fill up. How do you build engagement? And whilst mm-hmm. our vendors and our legal tech startups are incredibly clever, there's some really wonderful, you know, that they're figuring out how the different law firms use it so that they can help pass on to us how other firms have succeeded. And that's great from an external point of view, but that doesn't necessarily deliver success internally. So I wrote a long article on what that looks like. Product management is not new. There are hundreds of industries using it, but applied to legal, I think, and especially internal firms rather than just legal tech vendors, I think is brand new. But I think we do it automatically. I do think often that's what kind of what KM does, but I just put a label on it. So it's nothing really that new. And then we've also got, we joined that IFLIP, you've heard that, Institute for yes. Future of Law yes. program with Bill Henderson. So I'm a huge fan of new courses and new education, you know, the innovation that's going on with trying to develop the next generation of lawyers. So I want to support, and Bennett Jones wants to support that in any way it can. So we took on a legal innovation intern, and it's kind of more of that product management, which is the grinding, ugly, hard work that goes into productizing and delivering innovation. Like, some of this is really ugly, boring work, and it's not as sexy and shiny. And so, you know, but fascinating. I mean, you know, dealing with that big data and crunching data and teaching Kira through its amazing quick study, like, these things take time, and yeah. you can't get lawyers interested in that stuff. You have to show them the shiny toy at the end of it, and it has to properly work. So going through that learning process with our tech so that we understand it, so that we can improve it to a stage where it does work out of the box as far as lawyers are concerned, I think helps. So that kind of internal focus on delivering our tech is vital. Mm-hmm. Sorry, that was a very long answer to a very short question.
No, I love the idea, and I agree with you that some of these things KM has been doing for a while, but drawing on the experience of product management in other industries, I think helps bring some structure to that and think about yeah. how you can sort of build out and define that that role better, because that is exactly a role that KM is playing, is how do you make these new technologies work within the workflow of the attorney? So not just, as you say, the, you know, kind of the marketing spiel of it, but for your attorneys, for their practice, how is this going to work specifically?
Yeah, exactly.
And I also, I want to piggyback off of what you were talking about with the iFlip program and your legal innovation intern. So just a plug for a future series of episodes, Gwen and I worked with some students from Michigan State University College of Law, and we had 12 students this past semester working on, you know, these legal innovation type projects. So stay tuned for those episodes. But I also, you know, aside from the legal innovation intern, you mentioned your legal tech and innovation. Can you talk a bit about that role, but then also the makeup of the rest of your team and their skill set and how they fit into, you know, the work that you're doing, and especially the work that you're doing on the innovation front?
Yeah. So the legal tech and innovation specialist is our product manager, basically. So he started in May or something, or June. So we haven't had them long, but a bit longer than that. But he's a millennial, and that energy is definitely what you need. And someone who can operate from a networking point of view at a different level. So, you know, the junior associates who are a little bit more excited by tech than the senior associates and partners, and try and build off that energy that already exists in our firm about exploring new stuff. So he is the one that's responsible for building a bank of insights about how people work with technology, what complaints they have, what reasons they give about why they're not using it, that sort of thing, so that we can create campaigns around how to convince and persuade otherwise about why it's so important to use this technology, and then teaching the AI to be smarter before the lawyers have a chance to say, oh, it doesn't do everything, uh-huh, does it? I think seeing the early days of knowledge management in London's law firms, I think allowed me to explore different structures and team responsibilities and see kind of which worked and which didn't. They've had PSLs for a long time, and so they've been through the ups and downs of what that PSL role can and should be responsible for. And I was out in England when Practical Law Company was first launched and started to get, you know, properly adopted. And so I have a team of KM lawyers who are, they're non-billable, they're expert in specific areas. So we have an energy KM lawyer, we have a corporate commercial private equity, and then we have a capital markets and securities, we have a real estate and construction, and one joins us next week for litigation. So they are expert in their own areas. But they report into a central KM team rather than reporting into the practice groups, which I think is it offers some structure and support, because we have similar things that we can get done. So we, at the moment, we're still building our precedent collection. So at the moment, we're 70% kind of focused on precedents and precedent work, but it's work that goes above and beyond what Practical Law Company could do. So mm-hmm. we're looking at industry specific models and samples and checklists and practice notes and process maps. So it's more than what Practical Law Company, being more of a vanilla raising all the boats in the harbour, which is fabulous. We need to do the raspberry ripple or the rum and raisin ice cream flavours of what works for Bennett Jones and for Bennett Jones clients. And so they do 70% of that, and then 30% they work on our central projects, so our central initiatives. So we have to train all of the summer students and articling students when they arrive on all the tools that we use and give them support, you know, while they're all figuring out how to work at a law firm. We have someone who is interested in smart contracts and blockchains. We've got a lot of research going on about that. We've got someone who's more interested in the process and the legal project management and the budgeting bit. So 30% is spent on those things. And then all of the R&D and the testing that is required by some non-billables before we roll it out to lawyers to get, you know, what works, what doesn't. We have an internal QA team, which is fabulous because they are lawyers, so they can tell us whether they would use it in their practice or not, which means that we take up less time of our very valuable billable lawyers' time. They need to be delivering services to clients, and so this team we have is fantastic. Like a strong team is exactly what you need to be able to deliver the kinds of things that firms need to be involved in now on behalf of their clients. So.
Yeah, that sounds like a really interesting mix of what we call bread and butter KM, and then also sort of, you know, KM 2.0, this legal innovation space.
Yeah, for sure.
It's like you're covering all bases.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think those ratios will change. You know, once we have a bit of precedent collection going, that the maintenance means that we'll be able to change the ratios so that we get into much more of a maintenance and improvement and value add on the precedent side, and we can actually just help with the use and the embedding the use of not only the tools but the precedents themselves into the practice of law.
Yeah. No, that's interesting. And, you know, I think that mix is something that a lot of people are kind of grappling with how do you sort of support, you know, kind of what KM has always done and yet also support all of these new advanced technologies. And as you say, there's a lot of work in vetting them, in, you know, implementing them, rolling them out, adoption, configuring them for your team, figuring out that niche area where it's going to make the most impact.
Yeah.
How do you see that KM, you know, kind of given this, how do you see that roles in KM are potentially going to change in the future, or perhaps how your team might change in the future?
I'm an ardent anti-futurist. Thinking the future about technology is like reading tea leaves. I think your biases will dictate your predictions, but I kind of try and keep up with the latest trends and hype. And then I need to understand how it works to see how pervasive or life-changing the tech might end up being, not just what the vendors are saying, and see how it might be adopted by practices. But I think the most important thing is making sure that you can learn to quickly pivot when things change. So, you know, you need a strong, committed team that is flexible enough to roll with whatever happens and roll with the changes. Like, the, you know, this is... There is no definite future, but if you're focused on the right things, on a good mix of things, you're not putting all your eggs in one basket, and you're picking up your skill, more and more skills over time. I think it is interesting, having got an iFlip student who has decided that should lawyers learn all of the things that we know, you know, should they learn everything about project management and process improvement and design thinking and budgeting and pricing? Like, is that, I don't have the answer to this, it's just an ongoing imponderable, but I think it's a bit of a $1 million question to figure out how much should lawyers adopt some of these skills, and how much should we actually focus on collaborating with other professionals to make the delivery of legal services to clients a richer experience, a more valuable interaction. So I think
Right. So do you, for example, with legal project management, do you really need your lawyers trained in project management, or do you have specialists in that area who can help kind of develop the structure that they can work within that is drawing upon legal project management? I think that's a great question, and I agree. I don't know that any of us know the answer to it, but there is this balance of, as things change, how much do we need to expect lawyers to kind of, you know, learn these new disciplines, and how much is it, you know, something that's going to kind of, we're going to sort of shepherd them along in this.
That's right. That's right. I mean, I think collaboration and communication is I think one of the key skills I look for in any of my KM lawyers, and indeed anyone who works in my team, because I think as our teams have, the more diverse are the backgrounds of our teams become, whether that's legal teams or business teams, the more collaborative and facilitation skills will actually be required to be able to find more innovative solutions for our clients. And I think knowledge that these things exist is essential for lawyers. They need to know that there are tried and tested ways of delivering things like this, but it doesn't mean they need to be an expert in it. But just that awareness that there are these other professionals who are superbly skilled in this area. They've got their 10,000 hours. There are other ways of delivering some of this stuff, and so it's more about awareness than it is about becoming an expert in all of those areas. So yes, I definitely do not have an answer.
Yeah, and I feel like we're in the midst of that transition where lawyers are starting to understand that there are people who have deep expertise in areas that are very applicable to how they practice law, not just, you know, generating bills in the background, but, you know, the manner in which they're delivering legal services. And so I feel like we are sort of in the midst of this transition with that recognition, and some lawyers recognize it and they're reaching out and they're taking advantage of the help that other legal professionals can give them. And some lawyers are still a bit like, you know, I practice law and you don't really understand what I do. And, you know, no one can help me with my special sauce.
Yeah, right.
So I think we'll see some change there in the, you know, in the coming years.
Yeah, sure.
So you mentioned, you know, some qualities that the people that you look for, you want them to have are being able to quickly pivot and change with the changing needs and times. What are some other skills that you look for specifically when you're building your team?
Mm-hmm. Because of my background, I think the hyper user focus, the empathy, the constant reminder that we're doing things for others and understanding how they work and how this can be folded into the way that they work is important. And so making sure that that kind of user focus is primary, I think, is important. Curious as a cat. Curiosity, I think, is essential. I want people who can ask the silly questions and question the silly answers, because I think, you know, we don't know everything. Lawyers don't know everything. Somewhere in between of us, there is magic to happen. But if you're not curious, you're not asking the questions that can explore brand new areas. So I think curiosity and being learning obsessed, that our learning is never done, and that one person alone is not going to have the answer. I have slides for our students where I talk about, you know, the smartest person is the room itself, not an individual. So it's actually all of us, and that you're understanding that you are a node in a network that is supremely powerful, means that you can draw on other backgrounds, other ways of thinking about something to develop a much better solution or a much better way of thinking. So, and the other one is eagerness, eager for the new. I want slightly disruptive people, but not annoyingly disruptive people. Because, you know, I think, you know, disruptive people can be very powerful, but it can also come across as quite scary, and can get people on the defensive quite quickly. And so I think having someone who is interested in the new without necessarily being, you know, shoving it down your throat, I think can be difficult to find, but I think it's good to look out for.
Well, and going back to your point about being hyper user focused, if you have someone who's so disruptive that they're kind of missing their audience, who their users are, then that doesn't serve anyone. So you need sort of that creativity and disruption, but also, you know, someone who can remain focused on the users and understand what level, you know, how much can you move them at any given time.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
So what's the thing going on in KM right now that you are most excited about?
I guess it would be, I don't have just one. I'm excited about everything going on in KM.
That's a fair answer.
Yeah, that's a fair answer.
I think it's exciting that we are starting to get the tech that is phenomenally helpful and smart. I am excited by the fact that KM is slowly filtering through the our firms to finally have like some really amazing impact on the client facing side, like that KM has become now a little bit more vital, because you understand that these huge organizations need to centralize their best practices, because individual lawyers fighting by themselves is just not as powerful as the full firm. For you know, the client needs the collective wisdom of the firm in every deal that they interact with the firm, rather than these just a single lawyer and just their one brain. And I think that's kind of what the KM tries to do, is standardize and productize some of the amazing delivery, so we've got a more consistent quality and embeds kind of continuous improvement to keep getting better about you know, how can we do it better next time. And I think there's, for me, that the innovation helps. You know, at the moment we're very much focused on the efficiency that we can get out of the innovation that's coming through our walls, but that fits so nicely with the rest of what KM is trying to do, without, you know, don't reinvent the wheel each time. Assume that there's something out there that means that you're starting from a higher position and you're leaping off from there, rather than, you know, getting to what's already been created at a level. So I think KM is one of the most exciting places to be right now.
I agree.
You're here.
and also, you know, how are you staying current with all of these changes? So how do you continue to foster your own professional development?
I read everything. I also write. I find that I need to process my ideas. And so the Canadian Lawyer magazine that I write for every other month is a way that I can just test my ideas. I mean, I don't actually think that anyone's reading them, because that would terrify me, but really I'm using the process of being forced to write, because someone needs to give you a deadline. And to kind of figure out, is that going to work? Like if I write an article, I can kind of play with some of the ideas that have been floating around in my head and try and put some structure around them so that it makes sense. And I think that process can be really powerful for continuing to build on your own ideas. Having worked in the user experience and design fields, I am constantly looking outside of legal for inspiration and tips and tricks. And conferences, man, like that professional development side of what ILTA delivers for us and other organizations, I think it's essential. And learning from others. I mean, you know, in Canada, we have a wonderful KM group. All the directors get together once a month and we get to share some of our, you know, sometimes it's just, we're just crying on each other's shoulders.
but at least you know you're not the only one going through it.
exactly. And that support network is essential for your own development, and realize it's not just you. Some of these things won't work, and we've all been through it, and being able to share, you know, some of the successes with each other about you know, certain communications that have worked and has anyone dealt with this kind of thing. I think that's a really valuable piece to it. Did I mention I read?
Yes. And write, yes. And yeah. we'll provide a link to your product manager article in Canadian Lawyer Magazine, and other the people who access it can check out your other articles. So you will have some readers. I don't want to frighten you.
We did read your article.
We did. Yeah. And it's fantastic. Listeners should check
Thank
it out.
You. Yeah, I do love that idea, though, of sort of forcing yourself to flesh out your ideas by writing.
Yeah.
And that really resonates with me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. I might borrow that in good KM fashion.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Well, Kate, thank you so much. It has been a pleasure speaking with you.
Oh, I could do this for hours. It's so much fun. I love talking to others who are having you know, tons of experience of this and understand what we're trying to do here, and it's been great. I hope it's been helpful. I feel like it's been all over the place, but I'm sure there'll be, you know, some
No, this has been a great conversation, and part of the impetus for doing this series is because a lot of people in our community want to have these conversations, and we don't always have the opportunity to, you know, pick each other's brains and have these conversations. So we want to sort of share it with others. So thank you.
Yes, that's right.
Thank you for sharing what's going on in your world and how you've been sort of developing your career and team and thinking around KM.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm happy to, if anyone wants to contact me, just give my email address, and if anyone wants to follow up on anything, the how or the why or the what, or then I'd be happy to answer any questions or provide more information if people wanted it.
That's great. Thank you. And we'll include your contact information in the show notes.
Lovely.